It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now, you're listening to the Red Seat Podcast.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone!
Featuring Keaton DeRocher and Bob Osgood.
Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, right play, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Keaton DeRocher and Bob Osgood of Over the Monster for episode 315 of the show. As always, if you want to send us in questions, you can do so at redseatpodcast@gmail.com. We got a couple of those today, which we'll address. But first, pleasantries. Bob, Keaton, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? I think we all want to know how the Baby of the Year competition went last week.
Well, yes. You know, I had to prevent a member of the audience from attacking Bart Harvey Jarvis. So. That was exciting, but all's well that ends well, right?
It is such a joy to be able to Google every reference that you guys make in this show and be a complete idiot, which is what happened last week. And
I love it.
At least I'm up to speed.
It's my favorite thing. It's my favorite thing ever.
Yeah, you should really watch that show. I think you'd think it's pretty funny. It's insane.
Most people that I respect their comedy opinions agree with you, so
good.
I'll do that in the next, I don't know, 2 years.
All right. We're looking forward to your review of it.
Okay.
But Bob, how you doing otherwise?
Doing great. Thank you for asking, Jake.
You're welcome. I'm here for the people.
Yep.
On today's show, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to be getting to a lot of the busy roster moves that the Red Sox have made and get into some of those implications. We're going to try and figure out what's going on with this struggling Red Sox offense. And then we're going to have a minor league check-in where we go to all four of the levels. We're not going to deal with complex stuff, but we're going to go to all the four levels and check in on how the teams are doing and a couple of the interesting performances there. And then get you out of here with some listener questions. So let's get started, guys. I'm going to list out some of the roster moves before we get into these topics. So Nick Pivetta was activated tonight. As we're recording this on a Wednesday, he is getting kind of knocked around the park. Ozuna has a couple home runs off of him. A lot of missiles being hit off of Pivetta, but he is indeed back, and he's throwing hard. The corresponding move there was Naoyuki Uwasawa sent down. We also have Romy Gonzalez back and playing first base. Zach Short was DFA'd as the corresponding move. Vaughn Grissom was activated from the IL since we last spotted. Certainly since I last spotted, but even since you guys last spotted. And Bobby Dalbec was sent down. And we have a great thing to look forward to on this Sunday, as Brian Bello is expected to be activated and make the start Sunday against the Nationals. So let's start off with the one that hasn't happened yet, Brian Bello. When he goes down, or when he comes up, I should say, I think there's really four options for the team to send down, potentially. Winkowski, Zach Kelly, Cam Boozer, or a DFA of Chase Anderson, who does not have any more options. So let's start with you, Bob. What do you think is the move that makes the most sense here for the team?
I think now that everybody's back and I've had another week to think about it and look at what will be a full rotation here with Pivetta coming back today, Wednesday, and Bayo on Sunday, I think Chase Anderson is the move. I did think that they might send down Boozer for some flexibility, but you know, now just seeing this staff kind of back together with the exception of Whitlock, and of course, you know, Chris Wall's filled in pretty well, I think that it's a more complete pitching staff, which isn't the same that we can say about the hitters. But you know, I look at it, I see kind of everything falling into line. We'll see what ends up happening with Chris Martin here. I know he missed a few days, and hopefully you know, he can stay in that eighth inning role. But with Jansen and Martin and Slayton, and then you've got your two lefties and Bernardino and Boozer, and you know, I think we all like Weissert, Winkowski, Kelly. That just feels like a solid bullpen with everybody having specific roles. And unless you're just in a situation where you need an opener or you need a long guy, I don't know that Anderson fits into this 13 once Bayo is back. So I'm going to say that he ends up getting the boot.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I also initially thought maybe Boozer, but I like having the two lefties up there. The way Zach Kelly's pitching, I don't think it's even in the cards to send him down. He's just too valuable at this point. And with Winkowski having been stretched out in the time that they've had to deal with all these injuries, I do think that there's a little bit of redundancy now between Winkowski and Anderson. So I agree with you. Keaton, where do you stand on this?
Yeah, I'm right there with you both. Anderson, I think, doesn't really have a place when all the pieces are back here in the rotation and the bullpen. So I think he's the drop for me.
Yeah, and I think also the fact that Uwasawa has options and can be called back up too. If they, you know, do end up needing another long guy like that, they have somebody with options now in the organization who they can go to.
And it was interesting with Uwasawa because he said he had never pitched in consecutive days at any level going back to high school in his entire life. And then he made his major league debut and then pitched the next day. And I think it was two innings in both of those games. I found insane. That tidbit really interesting. Yeah, I thought so too. But you know, completely, I guess, different culture and the way that they throw over there. But it was just, I mean, talk about getting thrown to the fire. And he, I think, pitched well in the first game and didn't really have it in the second one. But that was part of the whole bullpen game situation that they were trying to get through the week. So, you know, hopefully I don't have to do that with him a whole lot.
Well, hopefully Alex Cora bought him a snow cone for his troubles.
You know, seems likely.
Something at the snack shack to, you know, make up for having to pitch him a couple days in a row.
Was that your go-to at the snack shack, the snow cone?
Snow cone? Yeah, that was a pretty good one.
I was a frozen Snickers kind of guy.
Ooh, frozen Snickers is good. Actually, my favorite is when you would find the snack shack that had the slush puppy machine. That was the best.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's get to this rotation here. You know, all of a sudden, the rotation is starting to look pretty normal. We've got four starters who were in the rotation at the beginning, once Bayo comes back. And then Cooper Criswell is in there doing a good job, looking really good, pitching really well. And, you know, I don't say that lightly. He is really pitching his ass off. He doesn't have crazy velocity or anything, but he's placing pitches really well. I've been super impressed with him. So I'm going to start with you on this one, Keaton. It does look to me like pitching, especially the starting pitching, might be a legitimate strength of this team, especially as they get healthy. Have you seen enough at this point now, we're into May, to buy into all the changes that have been made? And, you know, is this really a top five staff in the American League moving forward?
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I think so. I think there's enough of a sample size now that you definitely got to believe it, or it's extremely hard not to believe it. And I think that it's not just one guy. It's the entire staff that's doing this that really makes you feel like, I mean, that's when hopefully, you know, Whitlock comes back soon. And when he does, that'll basically make four players with an ERA under two in the starting rotation. Which is just absurd. So maybe not that good. There has to, I mean, that's just like, that would basically mean that they have the majority of the rotation is like a Cy Young candidate, which is crazy to think of an entire staff being that good. But bringing guys like Criswell in for their spot starts, even when Kowski's done really well, when they've, you know, relied on him. There's so many innings now of these guys being really, really good. That there's probably a little bit of regression, but I wouldn't say it's regression that would make everything fall apart. I think this is going to be a very quality starting pitching rotation through the entire season.
Bob, where are you with this? Do you think the regression monster is going to come hard for these guys? I mean, we're kind of already seeing a little bit of rust tonight with Pivetta. He's a guy that I don't particularly trust. You know, what do we think about this? Are you in agreement with Keaton?
Yeah, I mean, with Pivetta, he had the one rehab start at AAA, and he walked a bunch of guys and then complained about the automatic ball system at the end of it.
It's always a good look.
I'm sure he'll be welcomed back to AAA in the future after his glowing words coming out of there.
At least he didn't break a TV.
Terrible experience. But, so yeah, maybe he needed one more start. And, of course, coming back at Atlanta and facing that gauntlet in the first game isn't great. I think that, and this goes, I guess, for both sides of the ball, is that they had a pretty easy schedule in the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season. That's not to say that, you know, I don't believe in a lot of the changes that have been made. You know, this staff that I thought was going to be a weakness for them, especially with losing Sale and once Giolito got hurt and not thinking that they had a whole lot of depth. You know, I didn't expect Cooper Criswell to step up like this. And while he's not a 1.74 ERA, as Keaton said, these guys aren't going to be under two. You know, Crawford, Houck, and Bayo, if those three guys, along with, I mean, I should add Pivetta now that he's back, Crawford, Houck, Bayo, Pivetta, I mean, they all can go and have shown that they can go deep into games here. And, you know, their FIPs aren't far off. Like, Houck's FIP is 206 and Crawford's is 282. And Pivetta in limited innings was 224 coming into the game. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, the changes that they've made, clearly, you know, they have made everybody's work to their strengths in terms of the pitch mix. So I think it's somewhere in the middle in that they faced Minnesota this weekend. That was a tougher test. You know, they had won 12 in a row at one point. They face Atlanta here. They really haven't faced the AL East outside of three games against Baltimore, and they kind of got their ass kicked in those three games against Baltimore. So we get to see New York. We got to see Baltimore, and the jury's out on Toronto and Tampa. But as they play more games against the AL East, you know, I don't think they're going to fall apart. I don't think there's a huge regression that's coming because I love the changes that these pitchers have all made. But, you know, we got to see, you know, some sort of six-game home or road stand against Baltimore and New York and see if they get it done in that stretch to put them. But, I mean, yes, if they're top five in the American League, I think they probably are. You know, I just don't know if I would put them at the very top, you know, almost record setting that they've had over the first close to quarter of the season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Everything you said makes a lot of sense. I think for me, thinking about it, if I was to rank these members of the rotation in terms of how much confidence I have in them keeping this up, it would be Cutter Crawford would be one for me. I've loved everything about how he's approached this year. Tanner Houck would be a very close two. Number three for me would be Bryant Baio. Four would be Cooper Criswell, and five would be Pivetta. And I know that sounds crazy, the Pivetta distrust that I have, but there's too much of a track record for me with Pivetta not performing well, that I'm still just not confident. And I know that, like, he had that awesome stretch last year where he was really good for a while, but...
Can we rewind a month and have you say that sentence, like, after Pivetta dominated his first two outings, 0.82, and you're going to say that you trust Cooper Criswell more than Nick Pivetta?
I do.
Okay. I'm just imagining telling yourself that a month ago.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, Cooper Criswell has... I mean, who's pitched more innings at this point? It's got to be close between those two guys.
Yeah, Criswell's thrown 20 and two-thirds. Pivetta came in tonight with 11, so he's at 15 now.
Yeah, so sample size is bigger for Criswell.
There's a reason he's the million-dollar baby.
Yeah. I don't know. Am I crazy? What do you guys think? What would be, before we move on from this, is anybody's rankings drastically different than mine?
Who we trust to keep this up for the rest of the season? Man, this is on the spot, Jake.
I know.
Tanner Houck is number one for me.
I think that's
just
fair.
Because I love him. I think I'm with you on... I mean, it's pretty close between Criswell and Pivetta. I mean, you guys know my thoughts on Pivetta, so I don't think very highly of him coming into this. But yeah, I mean, it is a bigger sample size from Criswell. He doesn't have the track record of me watching him be terrible for years, so that's not fresh in my mind. I think I'm with you, Jake.
Yeah, I'm putting Pivetta fourth. Man, it is so tough because, you know, Bayo's been on the IL, and I still... I'm going to go Houck, Bayo, Crawford, Pivetta. That would be my 1, 2, 3, 4 of the guys will be back by the end of the week. But I think the top three, you can make a case for all of them. And, you know, with Houck, it's just like, I believe in these changes he's made because he's throwing strikes. And I think that he, like, the 3.9% walk rate, we're at 45 innings now. I mean, that is an insane number. And, you know, 32% called strike whiffs rate, like, I said it last week, if he did this for the other, I don't expect it, but if he kept up this performance, I mean, he's got strikeouts, he's got a low walk rate, he would be in the Cy Young conversation because he's throwing innings, he's going deep into games, he's throwing a shutout. It's just like, he's done everything. It's so hard to question it at this point if he can continue to throw strikes, and that's what kind of keep waiting for that other shoe to drop, that he's going to come out at, you know, in the first inning and hit a guy and walk two more. But it's just, we haven't seen it at all. And the one game that he was no good, it was an 11 hit game, where I think it's just such a focus of his that he's not going to nibble. He's going to throw strikes, and he's going to trust that his stuff is excellent and just keep the ball down in the zone. He's getting a ton of strikeouts. So, you know, again, it could turn at any time, but I believe in the changes he's made over anyone else.
Connor Crawford, though, too, I don't think we're talking enough about him. I think I agree with you that he's probably the third, but I don't think he's that far behind Bayo, because Bayo has had his injury issues. They've also kind of put the reins on him a bit there. But Carter Crawford just keeps getting better year over year. This is obviously a really big leap, but it follows the trend of him getting better season over season. He also leads the American League in ERA plus at 2.38, which is crazy. He's striking out a bunch of dudes. He's not walking a lot of dudes. He's doing really, really well. And I think we should probably be giving him a little bit more credit there. And I think I've got a lot of trust in Carter Crawford as well as being one of those three guys.
Yeah, I don't think ranking him third is a knock on him, because we're talking about by far the best ERA in the league coming into this series. You know, you got to have three studs to be in that spot.
I do think that there is an argument to be made that there's a clear two here. And I know that you guys both have a Bayo ahead of Carter Crawford, but, you know, I have Crawford one. Obviously, I'm the highest on him. But I think that the Crawford-Hauk is its own tier right now. I think Bayo has had his ups and downs this season, and I think we all three agree about the potential that Bayo has with all the stuff that he has. And, you know, when he's on, he looks fantastic. But Crawford, to me, is every bit as impressive as Hauk has been this year. I just love that guy. I think the fact that he doesn't have to pitch backwards to be effective either. The fact that he's one of the few guys with those four-seam fastball characteristics that do play up. It is one of the better fastballs in all of baseball without having overwhelming velocity, because he gets really good IVB and all those different traits that it has. It's got good rise to it. I just think that he's a special player. And he's getting better, like Keaton said.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair.
But isn't this a fun problem to have? Like, the fact that we are talking about, rather than what we kind of all expected, which is, you know, this rotation that was going to be a bottom feeder, we're talking about which young ace on this team that, you know, we think is best out of Hauk, Crawford, and Bayo. It's a hell of a problem.
I think a few weeks before the season, we were asking for storylines. Where are we going to find a storyline from this team? You know, we'd landed on Rafaela, and that was about it. So, I'm glad that we can talk about this every week.
I know Keaton's got his head in some research right now. I know when Keaton goes quiet that he's in the StatCast.
Not StatCast, but yeah, right. I was doing it, and just, I was on to the next topic and getting some research in.
All right, well, let's move on to that next topic. So, as surprised as we are about the pitching being awesome, on the flip side, this team has really not been scoring very many runs lately. If you have watched Red Sox baseball in the last week, you've noticed the theme of runners in scoring position not being driven in. You know, it's led to some pretty poor results recently in terms of the win-loss record. So there's a lot of things going on here, and I want to break down each and every one of them. But first of all, I want to start with you, Bob. What do you think about Vaughn Grissom since he's come back? Is he, you know, is he the offensive piece that this team needs to kind of get this thing going? Or what have you seen from him so far?
Well, he's played three games, so I don't want to overreact to anything. He's, 2-for-13 coming into the game tonight. I do think that it's a huge piece, especially with some of the other things that they're losing here. And I think that he's going to put the ball in play and he's going to make the plays at second base, albeit with an unorthodox throwing motion. I want to give it another couple of weeks before I have a strong opinion about this. But, you know, we're going to talk about other injuries and we'll probably talk about the 40-man and crunch and all of that here, because if Grissom wasn't coming back, we'd be looking once again at the lineup that we had in mid-April, because, you know, there were injuries before the season, and then you've got Cassis and Story happening in season, and then we've got two more that happened this week, and it's just like Grissom needed to come back now to provide some stability and make this look like a half-decent lineup, because there are moving parts all the time and very little room on the 40-man to work with.
Yeah, and I think at least one of the things that he should be able to provide is just some stability from being in the lineup every day. And even if he's not going well, he can give you those professional level at bats. He's not a guy who strikes out a lot. So, Keaton, I want to get to the next guy here, a little bit of a different profile in Romy Gonzalez, who the Red Sox had no qualms about putting right back into the lineup. He's got some legit thump here, ability to play all over the infield. He's a very versatile guy. A lot of swing and miss in his game, but, you know, is this what the offense needs to kind of get things going, is another home run hitting bat, especially in the absence of Tristan Casas?
Yes. And you led me right into kind of what I identified here in my research, too, is the difference between the first 2 months of the season. So far in May, the power is completely gone out of the lineup. And it wasn't just, Tristan Casas was a huge part of that, but it wasn't just him. Tyler O'Neill, another big part of that, but he missed a big chunk there. But this team was top five in all of the major leagues after March in homers with 36. They only have two in May. And we're about a quarter of the way through the month. And so if you project that out, they're on pace for eight, which is 24 less than they hit the month before. The power is just completely evaporated from this lineup, and it's kind of led to everything else you said. Power's gone, runners in scoring position, not going in, and that's becoming a major issue for them. So, yeah, sliding Romy in there, who can provide some of that power back, is exactly what the lineup needs. Now, he needs to obviously just follow through on that. I don't think any of us think that he's a perfect replacement for Casas and the power that he was providing. But that's where the gap is in his lineup right now, is the power is just not there like it was in the first 30 games of the season. And we've seen that translate to results on the field where they're just not able to get guys in.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was a little surprised that they were as aggressive as they were with putting Romy in at first. Today, you know, just throwing him right back out there after a short rehab stint. But yeah, he has a hit tonight as we're recording this, so it's hard to question the move of getting more power in the lineup. But Bob,
he didn't play first base at all, like in the minor leagues or previously. He had not played since 2019 coming into the season. So I thought it was interesting that he was at first, and it's Cooper that's DHing today, right?
Yeah, it is.
Like, why wouldn't that be reversed?
I wonder if it's just because they've had Cooper getting so many starts at first base, they wanted to give him a little breather or something. But, yeah, it doesn't seem like he's gotten that much time that he would really need that.
Right. But to add to what Keaton said, I mean, the power is, and it's 36 at-bats between Dominic Smith and Garrett Cooper, which isn't enough to, just like with Grissom, draw any conclusions here, right? Like, they're putting together kind of a makeshift lineup, and there's some new players that are coming in and other ones that are going out, and you're, for all the guys they had to play DH for those 2 weeks, now there really isn't a whole lot to choose from that of guys that are producing here. So none of those, you know, Grissom, Smith, Cooper, none of them have a home run yet. And only a few hits between the three of them. So, you know, just got to hope with more reps that they get going. You know, maybe they need a Fenway series to get those Fenway Park factors and get 8 or 10 runs up against Washington and Tampa that are coming up here. They got to get right, because this Minnesota-Atlanta trip was not the answer.
No, we all knew this was going to be a tough trip, and I think you guys mentioned it on the last podcast that I wasn't on, that this was going to be a tough stretch for them, given the way these two teams were playing, and it certainly turned out that way. But I want to get to the two guys that you mentioned, Cooper and Dom Smith, who have come in here and tried to replace Tristan Casas, and now also Yoshida being out. Bob, I know you advocated for Cooper as a potential solution, and Keaton, back to our Dynasty Guru days, Dom Smith was a prospect that you followed a little bit. So, let's make the case for these guys getting better. Do we expect that either of these guys can be an adequate fill-in for Tristan Casas? Obviously not going to be the same caliber player, but, who do we expect to contribute more to the team in these next weeks and months until Casas is back?
I would give the edge to Cooper, although I don't totally trust him to stay healthy, because it seems like he's kind of been banged up as much as anybody in recent years. It's not always long-term injuries, but he seems to kind of have nagging injuries and all that. But when he's on the field, he hits for decent power. And I think with Smith last year, like I said last week, his strikeout rate improved and his contact rate improved a ton. But he had 153 games on a Washington team that was, at the bottom of the division. And it was really just somebody that was available and competent that played every day. I don't know that his 12-46 in nearly 600 at-bats, speaks to what he'll give to this team. I think the Cooper has had a little bit more over the years. I mean, just a year ago was 17 homers and 61 RBI in 457 plate appearances. And I just think in the short term that he'll be a better player, and I think in the long term that he's a better fit when Casas is back to be a right-handed bat, especially since we don't know what's going to be going on a designated hitter here. With Yoshida, that could be a long-term injury. They're just going to need first base and DH type of bats, and that's exactly what these two players are, and they might need another one if anyone's out for a length of time. And, it's probably not Bobby Dalbec, is it?
No, sir. That ship has sailed. Keaton, you want to make the case for Dom Smith, or what do you think?
I think I'm kind of there with Bob. I think Cooper has been more consistent in the past few years that I think I feel a little bit better with him getting kind of the bulk of the role there. Obviously, both of them haven't really hit the ground running, but they're also less than 20 at-bats from each. So there's still a lot to get fleshed out there, but I think that made sense. Both of those moves and getting them both playing time, I think it is a little weird to have. I feel like, Bob, didn't you specifically say that you really liked these moves because it allowed them to not have to put someone who hasn't played first at first and then eventually get hurt? And then that's exactly what we're seeing tonight.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that we specifically called out the Franchi Cordero situation a couple times last week as well. I don't know. I mean, first base is still there's some nuance to it, right? Like, it's not something you can just go over and do on the fly. And it's not like Romy went down and played for a month and got used to the position. I don't have it up anymore, but it was like a game or two that he rehabbed there in AAA. And that's not something I want to see more than for, when you run out of position players.
Yeah.
Was it Franchi who blew the hamstring out the first time that he played there? Or am I thinking of someone else?
Someone was on a stretch,
Yeah, it was either him or Arroyo, right?
Oh, it was Arroyo. It was Arroyo on the stretch. Yeah, that was what it was. Yes.
They seem to want to do this once a year with somebody.
Well, it's always like a guy who's athletic enough that they're like, yeah, this will be fine.
Yeah, I'll throw him at first.
Yeah, it's no big deal.
Yeah. Right, I think the thing that is crazy about Dom Smith is that we're at the point now where we've been talking about these guys for like a decade because of the time we spent covering them since they were drafted at the Dynasty Group, and it blows my mind that Dom Smith is not 30 years old yet.
Yeah, well, Monte Harrison is pushing 30, and he's about to play college football next year, so,
you know. That is incredible.
It is, yeah.
Got a lot of amazing stuff going on these days.
He felt like he missed out on the college experience and said, you know what, I'm going to do this at 30.
He's just going to be the weird guy in the room.
There's nothing better than being the guy who's way too old to be hanging out with college kids trying to have a good time at a party.
Freshman dorm.
Teach me how to use Snapchat.
Is that Belichick?
Are you speaking from experience? No, that was Snapface, right?
Snapface, yep, Snapface. All right, let's get to a couple other injuries here. Rob Refsnyder dealing with a hamstring issue. Doesn't seem like that's going to require an IL stint, and that's a good thing because he's batting 350 with a 600 slug, so we need that bat in the lineup. Am I right? Mike Trout here.
Yeah.
And then Masataka Yoshida, this injury is a little bit scarier. So he is getting a second opinion on the thumb. I read today that it was supposedly an uncommon injury, so I don't know exactly what that means. I hope we get more clarity on this situation soon. But it seems like he might end up missing a decent chunk of time. So, you know, how should the team approach the DH position in the meantime? What they've been doing is basically sticking Dom Smith there while they have Cooper at first base, but you know, is there something else that they should be trying in this spot? What would you guys do? How would you handle this situation? Let's start with you, Keaton.
I don't think so. I think given the construction of the team right now, that makes sense to me, unless you're going to potentially give it to one of the guys we're going to talk about here in a little bit, but I don't necessarily think that DH makes a lot of sense for Madroth, especially the way they've been playing defensively down there in AAA. That makes sense to me, that split, until some of these guys come back.
You agree, Bob?
Yeah, I think it's really irritating that this is the time that Yoshida got hurt when finally all the pieces... After all that time, he's been, you know, we got too many DHs for these 7 days and all these guys coming back from injury. And, you know, you wonder if Yoshida hurt his thumb with it up his ass while he was sitting on the bench for a week straight. But they finally have everybody back. And it's like, okay, now you need somebody to just go out and hit. And then Yoshida gets hurt and hasn't played. And yeah, I'm reading the same thing you saw, Jake. All I can say right now is that it's a rare case. It's a pretty rare case. Seeking opinions and advice right now. Does that sound like someone that's going to be in the lineup on Friday?
It was so far stuck up there that it just, it's a real rare injury. We've never seen anything like this
like
before.
A South Park episode.
Oh man. But I'm I don't know. The hell out of it right now because nobody has more real estate in Bob's brain right now than Masataka Yoshida.
This is the third straight week that I found a way to get fired up about this situation. Yeah, you got Smith and Cooper. You got two guys that are first baseman / DHs, so they should get every at-bat there. We talked about Cavadas a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. That's another name you can throw out there too, right? Like, if they really feel like they're devoid of power in the lineup, and you want to take a shot on someone that, you know, is probably at an age that's ready to get called up and isn't one of the big three. And yeah, we'll talk about Madra too, but I don't know if we're going to get power there. Cavadas is the only name that I can think of. You know, I didn't want to just platoon him with Dahlbeck, but with Smith and Cooper here, you might be able to find some more backup at bats for him.
Yeah. And I think that, you also just need to make sure that you're playing Refsnyder a lot at that position. Yeah. Whenever he's healthy, especially considering you know, how his bat has been going and how he hits lefties, he needs to be at that DH position against every lefty.
And they face Corbin on Friday and Mackenzie Gore on Sunday. So hopefully they're given, I mean, Ref Snyder, of course, he would play against Sale if he was right. You got to hope that they give him 2 days off here and that he's good to go because, you know, if anybody, if Rob Ref Snyder should be facing anyone in the league, he's meant for Patrick Corbin on Friday night.
Oh, that's going to be a absolute fireworks show if he's healthy enough for that. So looking forward to that happening.
That is the game they should get their power stroke back.
By the way, Chris Sale finishes his line against his old team. 6 innings pitched, 6 hits allowed, 0 earned runs, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. So really happy to see him just like absolutely crushing it. He's one of the good guys out there. So happy for his success.
Yep. Agreed. Wasn't really pulling for that today, but I have enjoyed his resurgence out there, and Alex Cora was certainly defending any of the haters when he had the opportunity a few days ago. He was not pleased with anybody who was critical of Sale during his time here.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, so now it's time to get to our minor league check-in. We're going to go to each level and talk about them. So let's start with Worcester. Triple A Worcester is 16-17 heading into tonight. 7th place in their division out of 10 teams. But, you know, there is some positivity here with that record. They oddly have the 3rd best run differential in the division. So, you know, maybe a little bit of positive regression is coming there. But the guy who, you know, I think everybody wants to talk about, and I think especially you, Keaton, is Chase Mydroth. He's playing really well, and the unique thing about Chase is that he has recently started getting a whole ton of starts at shortstop. You know, it's a position that he's played a little bit, but recently he's been starting the bulk of his games there. He's also gotten starts at third base and second base this year. So, you know, what do you think about Mydroth? What kind of player do the Red Sox have here?
Yeah, he's doing so well. I mean, the main thing that sticks out is, I mean, he's kind of doing a little bit of everything. He's got 6 steals, 2 homers. But the crazy part is he is walking twice as much, as he's striking out, which is an absurd thing to do at AAA. Just getting on base any way possible, but also, I mean, and then immediately contributing with a whole bunch of steals. Has been able to hit a couple homers. He's got 3 doubles, too. He's kind of doing it all. And the fact that he is now playing the bulk of his time at shortstop makes me think that he's not far off from getting some time there at the major league level. And he actually started out at shortstop with the Sea Dogs earlier in 2023 with the bulk of his time at shortstop. And so him now getting a lot more of those starts just makes me feel like they are priming him for a role up the middle, and most likely at shortstop where they're playing him, and then moving Rafaela back to the outfield, solidifying that outfield defense, and kind of giving him some run in the infield to see what you can do with him. So I'm pretty excited about it. He's been playing strong defense, just crazy ability to get on base, and really looking forward to seeing that. It's also not, I mean, walking twice as much as you're striking out is a little bit out of character. But he nearly walked as much as he struck out in a full season last year, split between a couple different levels. And his first taste of Major League Ball in 2022 walked more than he struck out. So his ability to draw a walk and get on base isn't something that is surprising, but just the crazy rate that he's doing it this year is just insane, with striking out very little and just walking a ton. Really good to see.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he's cut his K rate to under 10% in last year at Double A and High A, it was hovering somewhere around 20%. So That's pretty remarkable. Definitely not a huge power guy, but contact and OBP is a huge calling card there. So I share your excitement with the offensive side of things. I do read the defensive changes a little bit different than you do. I think what they're doing by playing him at shortstop is priming him for what they think is going to be his ultimate role at the major leagues, which is super sub bench piece who can play absolutely anywhere in the infield and give you super high quality at bats. So I think he's going to end up being one of these bench bats that gets, you know, close to 400 to 500 plate appearances a year just by kind of shifting all around, filling in for guys when they're injured, stuff like that. So I don't actually think that this is any indictment on where they're going to move Rafaela or anything like that. But, you know, we'll see how the situation plays out. How do you read this situation, Bob?
I mean, is it a lazy comparison to say like a Nick Madrigal type of profile? Like, I don't think any of us are expecting him to be a starter. I'm sure like somewhere the 100th percentile outcome is, you know, the Dustin Pedroia, who just is a professional pain in the ass and wills his way to get on base 50% of the time for, you know, of course we're not expecting that. And Madrigal didn't walk like Mydroth does. I mean, this is just like such a unicorn type of player that we never see anymore. And I put into a piece last week, like after the top three prospects, I'm most interested to see what Mydroth offers at the major league level. You know, whether that's this year or next year, I'm just most intrigued by this to just see how it translates, because it's crazy. 22% walk and less than 10% K, a 440 OBP. And there's so many games that, you know, there was a game last week he was 0-for-2, but he walked three times. So he's an on-base hitter who got on base three of the five times that he was up. And it just, you know, you hear the scouting reports of him that he's just fouling off pitch after pitch and knows the strike zone better than anybody. So there's got to be a place for that. And like you said, you know, if Meyer is who we're hoping he will be, and Story somewhere in the middle, and, you know, we'll see with Devers, but, you know, these guys could all potentially move around. I don't think Mydroth is going to be a starter in the long term, but if he can back up every position, then that's a really valuable piece.
So I agree with you, but well, agree with both of you. Bob, I think Madrigal is a really good comparison. And also, Jake, I agree with you in the super sub role, but this year with the massive hole at shortstop because Trevor Story isn't there, I feel like that's where he's going to get the bulk of his playing time this year.
And you think that'll happen at the major league level?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I think it could happen.
You know what else I'm really interested to see, too, because of how well he does know the automated strike zone at AAA? How that translates to a non-automated strike zone in the majors, and what pitches he ends up taking versus chasing.
I'm particularly interested to see how it translates to Angel Hernandez.
Oh, dear God.
I liked on Friday when he was at second, and I was like, oh, shit, that means he's got the plate on Sunday.
Well, let's hope for a rainout.
Always an adventure.
No, this was last weekend.
No. Well, never mind.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The next interesting bit from AAA is Justin Hagenman, who many of you will recall as coming over from the Dodgers in a trade last year. And Hagenman came over as a reliever, but is now being used as a starter. And in his last start, he went 4 innings and struck out 8. So only a couple of starts so far, but, you know, 0 earned runs and 8 strikeouts with just 1 walk is going to catch your attention. It was against Philly's minor league team, which, you know, doesn't have an amazing lineup, but it's still, you know, against Triple-A hitters. So this is pretty interesting. Bob, let's start with you here. What do you think about Justin Hagenman, and what do you make of him being used as a starter?
I mean, they need to groom a couple guys in case there's the entire rotation is hurt, right? So you're looking at Criswell, who's already there, and it's been bullpen games and Chase Anderson. Other than that, you know, we want to see what Richard Fitz has and what a couple others might have down at AAA. And Hagenman, yeah, his whip is 0.98. He's throwing strikes. And as you said, it's just a couple of starts. But, you know, if there's 3 or 4 more good ones and there are injuries at the big league level, you could see a call there. You know, I didn't know a whole lot about him going into the season, but, you know, got to try everybody out. And, you know, as they extended guys like Winkowski and did so much of that in spring training, you know, the more guys that are stretched out to go even multi-inning reliever roles or the ability to slide into the rotation, I think is important. So, makes sense.
I think there might be something more here to than just the stretching this guy out because he might need length. I'm wondering with the stuff that he has and the size, if, you know, this isn't something that Breslow and Bailey have sort of identified as somebody who maybe they can work with as a starter. Might just be wishful thinking from me, but has me thinking that they see him differently than Bloom saw him.
23rd round pick in 2018. It's crazy the paths that some of these guys take to get in there.
That's why baseball's the best.
Yeah.
You got the Camboozer path, too. You can get hit by a car and come back.
It's just, there's no one you can compare other than the the guy they made the movie about, the Tampa guy there.
Yep.
The rookie?
Yes. But I can't think of the man's name.
The rookie. He was the rookie.
Was that on his birth certificate?
His name was Jim Morris.
Yeah, there you go.
He was the rookie is the insight Keaton provided after that.
Yep. Nailed it. Oh, where great. Was I wrong?
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's move up north to the Portland... Portland Sea Dogs, or the Portland Whoopie Pies, or, you know, whichever name we're going with right now. But this is the gem of the Red Sox system. 16-10, they're top of the Eastern League Northeast Division. We've got a whole lot going on at this level. The big three are up there, Teal, Meyer, Anthony. They're all, you know, doing things. I want to say that Anthony and Teal are, you know, tearing the cover off the ball, but, you know, Meyer certainly is right now, and I'm certainly not worried about the other two. In addition to that, Matthew Lugo's having a hell of a season. Zach Penrod's pitching very well. Blaze Jordan is getting a lot more reps at third base now that he's lost a bunch of weight. And Nick York was doing well and has kind of come off a little bit, but let's start with you, Keaton. Which of these storylines kind of interests you the most up in Portland, and what are you going to be watching for?
Oh, there's so many. There's so many. This team is just loaded right now. It's so much fun. I think of all of these, Nick York is the one. Some of the shine had been coming off him a little bit in the minors. Earned with a bit of a slump there that he had. So it's really good to see him back crushing it and doing well. And I hope that that continues so that he can be somebody that actually gets a decent run of playing time at the major league level and at second base, which is just going to continue to be a hole for this team until someone finally locks it down. But there's so many guys there that are doing well that it's just really fun to follow. And Matthew Lugo kind of having his breakout slash resurgence to minor league attention is really good to see too. But the whole roster is just a lot of fun. And I think Bean Suppas is my favorite of the theme nights.
No, there you go. I like that. Like that a lot. What about you, Bob? What are you excited about up at Portland? There's a poo-poo platter of excitement up there.
So I'm most interested in Roman Anthony because, I mean, Roman Anthony, like, he went from outside of the top 100 and beyond going into last season to top 10. You know, I mean, it was a meteoric rise, and so much of it had to do with, you know, at low A, he didn't even face any pitchers that could challenge him. And then he got to high A, and the power was really good, but the strikeout rate was high. And then he got to double A for 2 weeks. He hit .343. You know, and he wasn't really challenged a whole lot. And now he's getting the full season at double A, or at least the first half. We'll see. And he struck out 33% of the time. So I'm most interested to see how he fights back and kind of where the issues lie. With that, because I was just pulling his splits, which RotoWire has, and against right-handers, he's hitting .183, and against left-handers, he's hitting .310. So it doesn't seem like it's a lefty-righty situation. Is he struggling with curveballs, which I think we heard a little bit at high A last year? So, you know, just, of course, we're not overreacting to a month, but seeing the .226 average and the 33% Ks, which was something he ran into a little bit at high A, you know, how does he bounce back from that? Because, like I said, he got moved to the top of the list on in so many different sources. You know, it can just as quickly go the other direction with a slow half season at the age that he's at. But, you know, he's just 20. You don't want to overreact.
Yeah, has he even turned 20 yet? Is he still a teenager?
13th. Next week, he'll be 20.
Yeah. I mean, he is so young.
I'm going to give the man time.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But I agree with you. That's something to watch. I think for me, I'm going to go with a deep cut here. The Zach Penrod story just fascinates the hell out of me. A guy who in 2023 was playing for the Missoula Paddleheads in the Pioneer League indie ball, and is now pitching effectively at double A. You know, from the left side, has really good stuff, gets it up to 96 with the left-handed fastball. I mean, that's impressive. I know he's 26 years old, so it's not exactly young for the level or anything like that, but I've just really enjoyed the hell out of the Zach Penrod story, and I'm rooting for him to carve out a role in the big leagues, because it's like, this is the only sport that weird stuff like this happens in, I think, and especially happens to pitchers. So left-handers, you know, they get a lot of chances, they kind of live forever, and I'm rooting for Zach Penrod to be up in Boston at some point in the future.
Just I remember, like the rookie?
Played by the rookie. Penrod was good in the fall league last year. You know, when you get to late October, early November, and there's just no baseball to listen to, and you listen to all the dorks who are out in Arizona scouting games the second week in November. But I remember hearing Penrod's name a lot in that time. So, yeah, I didn't realize he was 27, but good to see him carry that into this season.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move to Greenville now. Greenville is 12-16, fourth place out of six teams in their division, the Sally League South. The star on the offensive side of the ball for them has been Christian Campbell, who is performing really well, playing a mix of center field, second base, and DH, which is a little bit of an unusual mix there. Keaton, what are your thoughts on Christian Campbell here? A guy who was drafted last year and seems to be healthy and performing really well.
I think Bob, as the the minor league guy of the pod.
Don't you dare.
Give you a better answer. Here.
You're a real asshole, Keaton. Okay. I do have thoughts. I have thoughts on Campbell.
All right.
Please. Go ahead.
This is the minor league guy on the podcast. I was intrigued by Chris Clegg's tweet last week where he said that Campbell did not hit a ball harder than 109 with a metal bat last year in college, and that he had home runs on back-to-back days at 113 and 110. And it just sounds like he has made adjustments with bat speed and strength. You know, he was the fourth rounder. He was a compensatory pick. Those are those picks that we hated were at the end of the fourth round because they went over the luxury tax the year before and they should have been at the second round. And Campbell, I think, was one of those. But he had such a huge four-game stretch last week, homering in all of them, having four hits in another game. And it just seems like, you know, with the batted ball data that goes along with it, that it's a player to get excited about here that... you know, you don't want to call it a pop-up, but late fourth rounder and, you know, just has really hit a stride in the last couple of weeks. How's that?
You know, that was good stuff right there. I would say so you've good. Established yourself as the minor league guy now. So that's solid.
Thank you.
The other guy who I'm really excited about down there is a pitcher, Luis Perales, who we've been talking about forever here. But he had a little bit of a rough start to the season. First start, you know, went an inning, gave up three earned runs. His last three have been good, and in particular, his last two have been really good. Last two starts for him have been four innings pitched, seven strikeouts. Limiting the walks in those, that's kind of been his issue, is he has command issues at times. But one walk in the one on the 27th and two walks on the one on the 3rd. So seeing progress from him, the stuff is absolutely elite with Luis Perales. So hoping for more of that as the weather continues to warm up and he continues to be able to hone his stuff. I'll be looking to see if he can make the jump up to AA at some point this year and how he'll perform there. But I think it's safe to say that this Greenville Drive team is very different from the Greenville Drive team last year that won the South Atlantic League because most of those guys are up in Portland. So we'll see if those same guys battling in Portland can, you know, maybe take down the Eastern League this year because they are leading the division. So... and it is a stacked team, so it wouldn't surprise me if they were able to. Last level that we're going to talk about here is Salem. They are 13 and 15 in the Carolina League North. That's a six-team division. And they've got some really interesting dudes. So on the position side, Miguel Blaise, Nizan Zanatello are very highly touted prospects. And on the pitching side, Blake Wehunt, Jedickson Paez, and Elmer Rodriguez Cruz are doing extremely well. The guy who I want to start off with here, though, is Miguel Blaise, who has really come on over the last 10 games. He's batting 300, 349, 475, and just crushed a home run. I think it was yesterday in that game. Obviously, a five-tool talent with some elite exit velocities. Alex Speer tweeted about him a couple days ago as well, citing some of the underlying numbers being really good. Let's start with you, Keaton. What do you think about Miguel Blaise and his performance down in Salem? And is this a guy you think maybe could jump a couple levels this year if he stays healthy?
Yeah, I think he keeps this up and stays healthy, we definitely could. It's really good to see him kind of have this comeback because he started off just absolutely ice cold. Even with that 10-game split, he's still only hitting 233 on the year. Something that's interesting to note, though, is he is getting worse on the base paths. Or maybe he's kind of just going wild right now. At A-ball, but He was 11 for 15 last year, 18 for 21 the year before, and so far this year he's 9 for 15, which is not a great percentage, and kind of running into outs there on base. I'd like to either see him rein that in or start being more successful there on the base pass. But yeah, I mean, you kind of outlined it pretty well. 5-2 talent, kind of putting it all together. 11 walks to 19 strikeouts is good to see. And him especially kind of being on fire the last stretch of games. Just need to see him continue that for a long period of time here. But if he kind of lives up to that prospect pedigree that he had, it wouldn't shock me to see him move up a couple levels here by the end of the year.
Yeah, and the other guy that I mentioned there is Nizan Zanatello. And Bob, this was a huge bonus guy for the Red Sox last year. He was drafted second round, 11th pick overall in that round, got a $3 million bonus from the team. And he's absolutely killing it since he came back from injury. He's only 18 years old, but he's slashing .412, .524, .824. Right now with a couple of home runs, stolen base. He's kind of gotten right into the groove. Right-handed bat, super-duper athletic. You know, what do you think of Zanatello? And do you think that, you know, given how much pedigree he has, would it surprise you if he earned a quick promotion up to Greenville?
No, not at all. I think it's just good to see that he is out there and healthy. And, I mean, this is a potential. He's just such a good athlete, but has the potential for five tools and, you know, ton of raw power and good speed, and has just come out of the gate. Like you said, .412 average is just six games, but check this box off and get up to high A for your 19-year-old season. And just to add to what we said about Blaze, like, if you go on the Fangraphs page, the last time that they did the top prospects for the Red Sox was June of last year, and that was after Blaze's injury, and he was second on their list. So there is a ton of variance with him, as we know, and the injury, a shoulder injury where you miss a whole season, is going to add to that. But, like, we can't forget that this was he was on a track to be one of the top prospects in the system. He's still just turned 20, and he's coming off a major shoulder injury, so you just got to give him time. And maybe this is him heating up, and as the season progresses, you know, he could, it's within possible outcomes that he can make a Roman Anthony type of rise if he puts everything together. You know, it's such a young age that we shouldn't rule that out. Like I said, that was after the shoulder injury had happened that they still had him second on Fangraphs. So, you know, same thing with Zanatello. Like, it's just, you want to see them produce at these lower levels, check that box, get to the next one, get to the next challenge, and he's doing that. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I'll go even a step further. I think I agree with everything said on Blaze, but I also think Zanatello is the type of dude that if he continues to play at this level, especially being an up-the-middle guy with that athleticism, I think he could break into the top 10 of Red Sox prospects and be on national radars by the end of the season. So
yeah,
some really good stuff there from those guys. Any thoughts on the trio of Blake Wehunt, Jedickson Paez, and Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, who are all just playing really well at Salem right now? I'll give you the ERAs here. Blake Wehunt, 22 innings or 15 and two thirds innings pitched, 1.15 ERA. Jedickson Paez, 19 innings, 2.37 ERA. And Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, striking out a ton of guys, 24 and a third and a 2.96 ERA with nearly 15 Ks per nine.
I really want to see someone named Elmer up. There's just not enough of that these days. Like, we need a Red Sox player named Elmer in the major leagues, and that's why I'm rooting for this gentleman.
But, like, he needs to have an absurd mustache as well.
Is there a Looney Tunes aspect to this?
Well, I think if you were looking for a Looney Tune out of all these guys, it would be the 6'7" Blake Wehunt, who you'd want to see up there. He's cartoonish in how huge he is.
Yeah, and so, I didn't answer your question, but like with Rodriguez Cruz, he's walked a lot of guys, but the strikeout potential is immense, and he's up near 15 per nine, which is craziness over 24 plus innings. And
yeah,
hearing just some scouting reports on him, you know, that's who's, you know, some people have seen that just think could potentially pop. So, you know, again, it's low A. We can't look at the stat line too much down there, but those strikeouts are eye-popping, and there's been good scouting reports as well. And an 80-grade name.
Yep. A lot of talent in this system, especially down at the lower levels. We got a lot of stuff to look forward to. So, hope you enjoyed that little preview. We're going to get to some listener questions now before we wrap up. Our first one is from Patio D. He says, hello, all. Are the impressive staff ERAs at all sustainable? I would think that hitters in the league combined with the warmer weather will bring the staff back down to earth, but I hope they keep shoving. It's fun to watch. So I think we mostly addressed this with our confidence rankings in these guys, but do either of you have anything to add to Patio D's question?
Yeah, I mean, I think the summary is that it's generally sustainable, maybe not the entire staff with an ERA under two, but I think we expect them to continue to be a force.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, agree with that.
Warmer weather, it's all going to be relative. So, I mean, we're going to start seeing some big scores coming up in the next couple of weeks. And it'll be a lot different game in June and July, but that's going to be the whole league. So, you know, I think it's more just a matter of, like I said earlier, how do they handle some of the tougher competition and when they get to those AL East games.
Yep, I agree with that. The second and final question comes from TJ McPhee. He says, good evening, gents. It has come to my attention that Jaron Duran already has 8 defensive runs saved, which, as Keaton pointed out to me before this podcast, is already up to 9 defensive runs saved this year. Is he officially a Gold Glove caliber outfielder all of a sudden? Have a great week, TJ McPhee. Thank you. You as well, TJ. Keaton, is he Gold Glove caliber outfielder? Especially yes. Playing center field now.
Yes. kind of digging into the defensive run saved. He has 5 defensive runs saved just based off of his range and positioning. Last year he was -3. So it's a turnaround of 8 runs saved. And we're, you know, just a little over a month into the season here. That was his big issue, was just the positioning on balls. I mean, just pretty much coming at him or ones that he needed to range to. Positioning was terrible. He was giving up crazy errors. He looked like he had no clue how to play the position. And he's completely flipped that around to now he's 2nd in all of baseball in defensive runs saved. And a big part of that is he's figured out how to position himself. The range we figured was always going to be good, just given his speed. But now him actually having really strong positioning to go along with that, he's running down balls all over the place and is playing incredible defense in a really difficult center field.
Yeah, I've never seen a defensive turnaround like he made. It's crazy.
This is the defensive turnaround we all wanted from Rafael Devers.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I mean, first of all, it allows everything else to fall into place with the way that Duran's played in center and the way Abreu's playing right. That allows you to make the Rafaela move for a year and hopefully not long term. If you look on Baseball Savant, his reaction times are really good. You know, they have, 105 outfielders that have qualified for it. He is 19th in reaction. His roots are a little bit lower. But obviously he's so damn fast that if he has a good reaction to the ball and he can use his speed, that he's going to get to a lot of them. And it's clear. I mean, it's such an eye test thing. Yeah, we can use these metrics, but you watch Duran out there and you know whether a guy is getting to the balls that he should, and he's done that. So, you know, it just allows everything else to fall into place so much, especially when you're at home. You can worry about left field a little bit less And if you've got a good center fielder and a good right fielder and a good shortstop, that can play, especially at home.
Have you guys heard the new nickname that Lou has for him running on the bases?
No.
The Angry Lizard.
All right.
Because when he runs, he looks like one of those little green lizards that you see, like, on the ground when you're in someplace tropical, because he kind of moves all of his limbs.
It's incredible to watch when he gets going. And yeah, like, the turn that he takes, the way that he, I don't know, just optimizes every step. Like, he hits the base and he's already turning, and the way that he gets to third is like, I don't know, that I don't see anyone else in the league that runs like him. And maybe it's what you're talking about, the style of running, but it's just game-changing speed. And, you know, I don't know, if he steals 40 or 50 bases, we said earlier, we get to mix in some power guys, but Duran at the top, even if he's not hitting home runs and just getting on base and running and playing a good center field, we got to fill in the gaps around that, so...
Everybody's going to be wanting to be the next Angry Lizard.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. You love the lizards, don't you?
The feeling you were going there.
All right. Well, it's been a great podcast. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. As always, if the audience enjoyed this, you can go rate, review, subscribe to the show. We do appreciate when you do all those things. Send us in some questions. We'll definitely answer them on the show. And we'll be with you again next week. So, as always, follow us on Twitter. You can follow Bob at BobOsgood15, Keaton at TheSpokenKeats, me at DevJake. We'll be with you again next week.